low-income families who scrap their old car will get funding to help buy a low-emitting vehicle in a $569 million scheme, just one part of the government's first emissions reduction plan announced yesterday. It's a strategy to achieve the necessary emissions reductions in the first of three carbon budgets. The first one is from the period from now till 2025. Over $2.9 billion of the $4.5 billion Climate Emergency Response Fund, or CERF, will get spent over the next 4 years. Funding will come from revenue going into the emissions trading scheme rather than directly from the taxpayer. The draft reduction plan announced yesterday is weighted towards subsidies for low-income households, whether replacing a high-emitting car with an EV or hybrid, or subsidies to improve insulation and the installation of heat pumps. However, the agricultural sector, currently exempt from paying into the emissions trading scheme, will get nearly a quarter of the sum paid out of ETS revenue via the Climate Fund. Over $700 million of funding over 4 years will go towards accelerating technology in agriculture, including a new Centre for Climate Action, and towards boosting forestry to help with carbon sequestration. The government plan largely shies away from outright bans, such as that mooted for new gas connections or fossil fuel imports. Yesterday's plans effectively the third leg of the stool in the government's climate strategy following the establishment of the Climate Commission and the passing of the Zero Carbon Act. The chair of the Climate Commission is Dr. Rod Carr. Good morning.
You're a Catherine.
Let's look at some numbers, but without the numbers, please. Does yesterday's plan look like it will achieve the government's emissions reduction target for the first budget period, from now till 2025?
Now, Catherine, there's lots of analysis to be done and detail yet to be released before the Commission can undertake the quality assurance work that it must do. On the face of it, the budgets, which have been approved by 107 members of Parliament, are consistent with achieving the statutory targets. And the question now is the analysis of the plan to align it with those budgets.
At the moment, i.e. before this overarching plan, which is now to be analysed, we were missing those targets and missing them quite significantly, weren't we?
We were not on track to meet the targets. That is correct.
I want to come back to that a little bit later, because there are costs attached to missing them if we miss them. Let's have a look at the first budget then. And it was the budget that set the target for how much climate gas overall can be released. It's a sinking lid over three emissions budgets. The first target will be slightly less than was emitted in 2017 overall. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And the cut's much deeper in the second two budgets.
Yes, they are.
When you look at what came out yesterday, how does it compare to the roadmap that the Climate Commission itself put out?
The budgets that have been adopted are very consistent within the margin of error of measurement and likely outcomes to what the Commission advised the government 11 months ago would be consistent with putting us on a track to achieve the statutory targets. So the Commission is satisfied that the budgets Parliament has now agreed are consistent with the best knowledge about achieving targets.
Was there a lot of pick and choose within your climate roadmap?
Yes, and we were very clear to say that while we had articulated what we called a demonstration pathway, it was only that. It was a demonstration of one of the pathways that would have been consistent with achieving the emissions budgets that we recommended. The policy direction that we advised on is not the same as the detailed policy decisions that a government of the day would need to take. And this plan advances that level of granularity, but does not complete the work that must be done to implement specific actions.
At the higher level then, what has been chosen and selected and what has not been chosen and selected? What are some of the main points you would highlight? For example, the ban on new gas connections isn't there. The ban on new fossil fuel vehicles imports after a certain time is missing from the plan as well. What else would you highlight as being selected and or rejected? That's significant.
Yeah. So, Catherine, I think the first thing to remember is this emissions reduction plan is the plan for the first budget period, which ends in 2025, at the end of 2025. So it's a plan for stuff to be done in the next 2.5 years. by the end of next year, 2023, the Commission will be providing advice on the emissions reduction plan for the period 2026 to 2030. So as a result of the process underway, we're going to get two cracks at this in pretty quick order. And then each budget period has an emissions reduction plan. So while the budgets go out to 2035, this emissions reduction plan is what this government plans to do in the next 2.5 years. And it's pretty clear that much of the time will be taken in laying the foundations for further action in the second budget period. And one of the key actions is to keep New Zealanders on board with decades of change that is ahead. And building and maintaining momentum is critical, or we are going to create uncertainty for households and businesses that will then lead to missed budgets and failure to achieve our targets. So I think the really significant part of this is the first plan, it's not the last plan, that this emissions reduction plan does highlight rewards, incentives, and building structures and institutional arrangements to support the transition. There is no doubt that the government is signalling a desire to work with businesses, to work with New Zealanders, to help them understand and develop the tools and change lifestyles and livelihoods to a low emissions society. It is the case that the emissions trading scheme will also play a part in pricing emissions. But what is very clear now for all New Zealanders, households and businesses alike, is that there is cross-party support to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions in the years to come. And that those of us who are involved in earning a living in high-emitting businesses and those of us associated with high emissions lifestyles are going to be the ones facing the higher costs and the greatest vulnerability.
Okay. So softly, softly for the first budget's what you're saying, that as soon as late next year, the Commission may well be signalling some much tougher actions being needed, and that it may be in second, third and third budgets that penalties and bans feature.
Well, we hope incentives and rewards will get us. It's a much happier world to live in.
Is it just looking at this issue, though, of agriculture, right? Still not on the ETS. Speaking of softly, softly, and speaking of trying to keep people on board and trying to get things to happen through self-directed advances. A lot of money out of the surf is going towards the agricultural incentives, some of them further technological research, but also quite a chunk towards forestry to achieve carbon sequestration. Now, you warned in your earlier roadmap against an excess of reliance on offsets, an excess of reliance on the planting of trees, because the country can't plant its way out of its commitments forever. It needs to face up to real cuts to emissions. Are you concerned about the waiting in here already and the amount of conversion from pastoral farming to carbon farming that is already happening?
So, Catherine, I think the land use sector is very important to New Zealand. It's important because of the way in which we earn our way in the world. It is also really important for New Zealand because for provincial and rural New Zealand, land use not only defines their livelihoods, it defines their communities and creates opportunities. So I think it is appropriate to think very hard about the land use sector. But let's just address a couple of things. This emissions reduction plan restates without ambiguity that agricultural emissions will be priced from January 1st, 2025. And I think that is a very clear message, a very clear statement against which the Commission can hold the government accountable. So those who might fear backsliding will be able to hold the government accountable for that commitment. The government also repeats and states in its emission reduction plan, all farmers will have emissions reporting by the end of 2022. and mitigation plans by 2025. These are very specific statements by this government about its expectations of the agricultural sector. It has engaged in a partnership called He Waka Ekanawa to work with the agricultural sector to give effect to those commitments. So those who think farms and farmers and agricultural emissions are being let off need to remember what has been committed to. The government has also heard from farmers, as the commission did, that farmers need support to know about and take up the already known ways of reducing agricultural greenhouse gas emissions. The farming community has also lobbied and been responded to that more tools, more technology will be needed to achieve the agricultural emission reduction targets. And the government has responded to that claim by providing funding to support that research and the deployment of technologies to reduce emissions. In essence, what the government is saying is to the farming community, you said you needed support, here's support. You said you needed research and tools, here's the money to help with the research and tools. We, the government, are doing our part. Now you need to do your part, which is to come into the world where agricultural emissions are priced, where farms do have emissions measurement capability, do have plans to reduce emissions, and those are consistent with the targets that Parliament agreed in 2019.
Can we talk about the liability ahead, Dr. Carr? Sorry, just last question. It's important. Talk about the liability ahead that we alluded to earlier. Is it correct that this plan is about how to achieve targets for reductions in net emissions domestically, but that in reality, to meet our international pledges, our Paris commitments, two-thirds of our contribution to that will still come from buying credits overseas, paying others for the cuts they've made rather than making our own? Is that still the case?
Well, of course, what we don't know is how it will turn out. It is the case that we have now got an anchor point through our nationally determined contribution of what New Zealand has claimed it is entitled to emit over this decade. So we put up our hand and said, we, New Zealand, believe we are entitled to this quantity of greenhouse gas emissions given international standards for the way that is measured. We now have the choice of how much of that reduction are we going to do through domestic action, how much are we going to do by reducing gross emissions or sequestration, and what is the residual that we are going to have to buy offshore credits for. That's all within our choice. So if New Zealanders don't want to pay someone else to do the work, we need to do more of the work ourselves. If we don't want to plant trees where we shouldn't plant them, we have to do more of reducing gross emissions. It's very easy for me or you or households or businesses to point the finger at government and say what government needs to do. And while what government needs to do may be necessary, it is not sufficient. It requires each of us and our businesses to look at the ways we live and the ways we earn our living and put pressure on others, but also take action ourselves.
As things stand now, though, are we still up for buying perhaps 100 million tonnes or more of carbon credits on the international markets to meet our global commitments at the end of 2030?
Yes.
And that's going to be $7.5 billion, or perhaps $750 million a year on average accruing over that time.
Well, that assumes that the carbon price doesn't go up.
Well, true. That's on current carbon price. So that liability, as things stand at the moment, $7.5 billion end of 2030. And as you say, carbon price goes up 25%, 50%, 100%. That's what happens to that liability.
Correct.
Is it paid for by the taxpayer unless these reductions happen and happen dramatically? And that's not been our track record to date. Is that coming out of taxpayer funds?
It's coming out of New Zealand's wealth. It will be for a government to determine whether it is going to use the consolidated revenue to fund, whether it's going to use proceeds from the ETS to fund, whether it is going to levy those who benefit from emissions whether they're in the ETS or not, or whether it's going to borrow the money to pay. And all of those will be decisions for future governments.
Thank you. Rod Carr is the chair of the Climate Commission.